Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Regional Integration and EIM Greenhouse Gas Compliance Stakeholder Call. My name is Jimmy Bashar with ISO Stakeholder Affairs, and I'd like to introduce the other ISO staff with me here today, beginning to my left.
Craig Williams.
Brian Cooper with Market and Infrastructure Policy.
Brittany Dean.
Don Treadway.
Jim Price.
George Angelidis.
Peter Colucci.
Thanks. The stakeholder page for this initiative and other related information can be found on our website by hovering over the Stay Informed tab and selecting stakeholder processes. Our agenda for today's call is to discuss the revised draft final proposal, which, as a reminder, will be posted today following the call. Within this revised version, the ISO has identified changes that improve the solution performance of the proposed two-pass optimization. This approach achieves the objective of reducing secondary dispatch consistent with the principles discussed throughout this initiative. Please also remember to state your name and company you represent before stating your question. And for those on the phone during our call, should you have any questions, you can enter the queue by hitting #2 on your phone. Also, as a reminder, this call is being recorded, and the recording will be available on our webpage a couple of days following this call. With that said, I will hand it over to Don Treadway to discuss changes from the previous proposal.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. So we're continuing to look at this design and have identified a way to simplify and improve the solution time of the second pass by making a modification. I think it's important to remember that for this design, we're doing a little different approach than what we do for our other market designs. What the purpose of this draft final proposal, or revised draft final proposal, is to communicate to stakeholders what we'll be implementing for the purposes of generating a report after we have put the design into parallel operations so that we can then evaluate its effectiveness in addressing the secondary dispatch issues while minimizing minimizing the complexity as well as minimizing any potential for pricing issues outside of the ISO. All of that, you know, consistent, again, with the principles we've been discussing throughout. So in terms of the change that we're making, it's still a two-pass solution. And so, as you all recall from the draft final proposal, we were adding, in the second pass, a resource-specific constraint that ensured that the GHG attribution to that resource had to be above the GHG allocation base, or the reference level, that we've determined in the first pass. The improvement that we've identified that we can make and still reduce significantly the secondary dispatch is to simply limit the GHG bid quantity of EIM participating resources to its upper economic limit, which is the maximum upward bids they have, less that GHG allocation base that we determined in the first pass. So the first pass remains exactly the same as we've been discussing throughout this initiative. We simply don't have to now add a constraint in the second pass. We can simply use our existing functionality and limit the bids and receive similar results, we believe, in reducing secondary dispatch. Okay. So I'll pause there for any questions, and then we can go through it with a little more detail on the upcoming slides.
Please remember to press #2 on your phone for any questions, and I'm not seeing anything at this time, Marvin, unless you're seeing something in your end.
I'm seeing no questions at this time.
Okay. So first I want to just, you know, remind everybody of the current bidding rules that we have with regards to the GHG. So EIM participating resources are able to, on an hourly basis, submit both a single GHG bid price and a GHG bid quantity. The GHG bid price has to be at or below a daily calculated maximum cost for the resource. So we do have a limit on the GHG bid price that can be submitted. For the GHG bid quantity, it can be anywhere between 0 megawatts and PMAX. The key here is that a resource allowing this flexibility to bid the megawatt quantity allows the resource to effectively opt out of being considered for attribution to California by bidding zero. but it also doesn't have any restrictions on whether or not 100% of the output could be attributed to support an EIM transfer. And so what we're looking at is simply putting now a limit on that GHG bid quantity that we calculate out of the first pass. Okay? And then that's why we can continue to use in the second pass our existing functionality for clearing the market, because the market already supports the ability for resources to submit a bid less than its PMAX. So the revised draft final proposal will limit the amount that can be attributed to any remaining upward dispatch capability. So we performed the first pass solution optimization, which gives us where we solve to the knot and don't allow transfers from those EIM participating resources into the ISO. The first pass solution then gives us a GHG allocation base for all participating resources. That's the optimal economic reference level to serve load outside of the ISO. We then adjust the submitted GHG bids for the EIM participating resources to its upper economic limit less its GHG allocation base. So that results in only in the event that there's upward dispatch range on the resource, and only to that quantity can it be attributed to be serving California or California ISO load. And then lastly, we perform the second pass, which is basically the same pass as we have in the current optimization. So we've all come to love these diagrams as we walked through them through this entire Stigler process. So I wanted to walk through them again, and we can see that the proposed, the revised draft final proposal actually achieves the same result as what we've been discussing previously. So this is based, is all of the assumptions that we use for the example. What I've highlighted is that we have always assumed that the GHG megawatt bid for all of these resources was its PMAX, or base, or 200 megawatts. Okay? So if we assume that they optimize their base schedules, this would be the optimal solution. We can see there's no redispatch in this example just because of the way we set it up. So we've got G1 dispatched at its PMAX and G3 dispatched to zero. Under the current market formulation, the result would be that we would increase G3 from 0 megawatts to 200 megawatts. It would then backfill G1 so that G1 could then flow to California. And this is the example of secondary dispatch. G1 did not change incrementally, but yet we attributed all of the GHG as coming from that resource. And in doing so, we don't reflect that there was a $6 greenhouse gas cost that of G3 to serve load in California. So now with the proposed change, where we limit the GHG bid quantity to the upper economic limit, you can see that we've now modified G1's GHG bid. It was previously 200 megawatts. Now that we set it at 0 megawatts, because we took it the first pass solution of 200 less its GHG bid, gets us to 0. And as a result of that, we now correctly attribute G3 as serving load into California. And we see that the energy price inside California recognizes that there's a $6 GHG cost. We attribute the GHG awards to G3. They are compensated $6 for being attributed to California. And the load outside of California remains at $30. So we've achieved the same result with an approach that actually improves our solution and simplifies the implementation in the second pass. So with that, I'll pause and see if there's any questions on that.
As a reminder, please press #2 on your phone to raise your hand, and operator will be sure to call on you. At this time, I am not seeing any questions.
Okay.
Actually, we have one question. Operator, if you wouldn't mind opening the line for Wei Zhu.
Hi, Don. This is the way. I have a quick clarification question on this. Make sure I understand the change. So just to use an example here, if a resource is, say, dispatched higher than its JG bid in the first pass, how would the resource be possible to serve California? Say if a resource has Pmax 100 megawatts and only submit JG bid at 30 megawatts. Now, if the first pass dispatches a resource at 50 megawatts, then end of today, that resource may still be able to serve the California, right? But under the proposal, then, you would actually limit that resource, not be able to serve the California. Is that the case?
Correct. So in your example, they submitted a 30 megawatt GHG bid, and under the current design, that would limit their attribution because their dispatch is above that GHG bid. So that would limit their attribution. Under the current design, you would, in essence, reduce their GHG bid to zero because they were dispatched at 50 megawatts in the first pass. So they could not be attributed to serving load in California.
So if it's dispatched at 50 megawatts today and it's submit a JG bid at 30 megawatts, why the resource cannot be deemed to serve California? I'm sorry.
Hi, Wade. This is George. Just to understand your example, what is the energy bid range for that resource? How high is it bidding? Is it bidding up to 50 or higher?
The energy bid is going all through the PMAX, but the JG bid only at 30 megawatts. So in my example, so the PMAX is 100 megawatts, the energy bid up to the 100 megawatts, and then JG bid only up to 30 megawatts. And then you run it today.
Right. Yeah, and you said it was scheduled at 50 megawatts in the first pass.
Right.
Okay? All right, so that schedule of 50 megawatts in the first pass is basically the energy that would have been optimally generated by this resource to serve non-California load, agree?
Well, I think maybe 30 megawatts out of the 50 megawatts were deemed to serve California because the JG bid up to 30 megawatts.
In the first pass, we don't do a greenhouse gas allocation, right? The first pass, as Don showed you here in the example at the beginning, we just limit the transfers to California and we find an optimal solution for serving non-California load, right? So if this resource is scheduled at 50 megawatts, 50 megawatts represents the energy that would have been optimally dispatched by this resource to serve non-California load. Agree?
Yes.
Okay. So this is, we have to go through this before we can analyze the example more. And since it has 100 megawatt maximum energy bid, under this proposal, we will say that the remaining 50 megawatts on top of that 50 megawatt greenhouse gas base from the first solution is all that we would allow to give an allocation to this resource for greenhouse gas, because we say the bottom 50 is reserved for serving non-California load and we don't want to have secondary dispatch for it. Now, there is also another limit that comes from the bid, from the greenhouse gas bid. We also do not exceed the greenhouse gas capacity bid in the allocation. So you have the lower of two limits now, 50 that we determine as the difference between the upper economic limit and the 50 megawatt first pass optimal solution, and the 30 megawatt greenhouse gas capacity bid. So the 30 megawatt wins, it's more restrictive. So in the second pass, the greenhouse gas allocation to this resource, it will be limited to 30 megawatts unless the resource is actually optimally dispatched below 30 megawatts, because there's another limit. We never allocate more than what is the energy that the resource is dispatched for. Does this now come all together?
Okay, so the second pass, you would revise the gigabit quantity from 30 megabits to what? I'm sorry, I lost it.
It will stay at 30 in this example because it's the lower of 50 or 30, all right? 50 is how much room you have on the resource for allocation after the first pass, and 30 is how much is willing to assume a greenhouse gas responsibility, so 30 is the limit. So in the second pass, it will receive a greenhouse gas allocation up to 30 megawatts.
Okay, got it. So if it's
example, there's no really. Go ahead.
So yeah, so if the GGB quantity is lower than the calculation or the calculated, where the Pmax minus GG allocation base, the quantity won't be changed.
Yeah. So you essentially have three limits on the allocation in the second pass. One is the dispatch. We will never allocate more than what the dispatch is, okay, in the second pass. Second, the greenhouse gas capacity bit. We will never allocate beyond what the participant is willing to assume greenhouse gas responsibility for. And the third one that is introduced here with this change in the proposal is we will not allocate more than the difference between the upper economic limit and the greenhouse gas base, which is the schedule, the optimal schedule in the first pass. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, George. Thanks. Operator, if you could please open the line for Mark Holman.
Hi. Good morning, Don and George. It's Mark Holman at PowerX. I thought that conversation was really helpful as well as these slides. I just want to make sure that we've got it clearly. So I think that what was just described, you had a 100-megawatt unit that passes pass 1 at 50. The amount that can be deemed to go to California in pass 2 is the lower of what the scheduling coordinator has identified as how much they're willing to accept, which is the GHG bid as it exists today, and the amount of upward headroom, so the amount that resource can be inked above its base, its GHG base. And it's the lower of those two that can be deemed to go to California. So I think the way you described it, George, was excellent in terms of, you know, if that resource is at 50 in the first pass, that 50 megawatts would have served load outside California anyways. It shouldn't be deemed to go to California in the EIM. Now, if that resource is inked to 70, in that case, you would deem 20 to go to California potentially because it's moved 20 megawatts above what it would have ran anyways to serve load outside, and the participant's willing to have 30 megawatts deemed to go to California, so it's the lower of those two. But if it was inked to 90, you would deem no more than 30 because the SC is only willing to take 30, but it's been inked 40 megawatts above what it would have served in pass one. Did I get that correct?
The first part, no, Mark, because now in this revised proposal, we do not have a constraint that limits the allocation to some incremental dispatch above the base. So when the resource is scheduled in the second pass at 70 megawatts, it can still get a greenhouse gas allocation up to 30 megawatts. So we only limit the amount of the greenhouse gas allocation, but we no longer require gas allocation to be incremental to the base.
So the formula would be the lower of the headroom, which is 50 megawatts, and the 30 megawatts. Just to
correct.
Be correct. So it's what the SC submitted and the amount that the resource moves could move up above its external, what it would have served load outside.
Yeah.
So you know, the better way to look at it is assume that resource previously had a GHG bid of 100 megawatts. We now don't allow the entire 100 to be considered in the second pass. We limit it to the 50 now that just is the remaining upward headroom of the resource.
Can you? That's helpful, Doug. Can you go back to slide 9?
Yeah.
I think it's slide 9. So I think this is a really good example of what we think is happening today, which is you can have, and I'll just use an example. Let's say it's hydro in PacWest, where that resource is fully base scheduled, fully going to run to serve load outside. There's gas that's inked in this example, say from zero to 200 megawatts. It's clearly gas that's increasing its production in the EIM because that hydro in PacWest would have served load anyways outside. It was already economic to do so. Today, if the GHG was set at 200 megawatts, it could deem all of that hydro to be serving load in California in the EIM at zero emissions when in fact it's gas that's increased. I think your solution addresses the bulk of the problem. I think that you know, it'd be great to see some analytics once you put it in place and you've ran some scenarios and shared some data, but I think our initial belief is that this is going to solve the bulk of the secondary emissions issue.
Thanks.
Looks like we have another question. Operator, could you please open up the line for Doug?
Hi, this is Doug Bocignone with Flynn Resource Consultants. I'm curious how this affects the part of the proposal related to designating resources as California resources.
Yes. Hi, Doug. This is George. So for California supply resources, because we understand from their designation being a California supply resource that they have some obligations for serving load in California, we want to allow a greenhouse gas allocation in the first pass for these resources. So normally we won't allow a greenhouse gas reference, a greenhouse gas allocation for resources the first pass, so the California supply resources will be an exception. And we can easily achieve that in the first pass by simply ignoring the greenhouse gas bids for anything that is non-California supply and considering the greenhouse gas bid from California supply resources. So they may receive an allocation, a greenhouse gas allocation in the first pass, if they're economic to do so, competing with ISO generation, right? So then the question is, when we go to the second pass, what is the greenhouse gas base for these resources? So the way we will calculate the base, for every other resource that is non-California supply, the base, as you know, is the optimal solution in the first pass. But for California supply resources, we have to get the optimal solution in the first pass and then subtract any greenhouse gas allocation that they may receive in the first pass, so we make sure that it's eligible to continue receiving a greenhouse gas allocation in the second pass. So I think it's best if I use an example numerically to explain this. So let's work with the example that we started talking earlier. It's a 100 megawatt resource. Let's say it's bidding for greenhouse gas allocation up to 100 megawatts, the whole capacity. And it's scheduled in the first pass to 50 megawatts. And let's say that this is a California supply resource, so we allow this resource to get a greenhouse gas allocation in the first pass. So let's say the dispatch in the first pass is 50 megawatts and it receives a 20 megawatt greenhouse gas allocation, okay? What this means is that out of the 50 megawatts, the 30 megawatts was going to be dispatched presumably anyway to serve non-California load optimally, and then the remaining 20 megawatts that got a greenhouse gas allocation is competitive to serve load in California. So now when we go to the second pass, we want to set the greenhouse gas base to 50 megawatts minus that 20 allocation, basically to only the 30 megawatts that is deemed to be serving non-California load, so that then we will limit the greenhouse gas bid in the second pass to 100 megawatts, which is what the participant bid, and its maximum upper economic limit, minus the base, which is 30 megawatts. So basically we say in the second pass, we have a possible limit for greenhouse gas allocation up to 70 megawatts. 50 megawatts was the headroom that was unused in the first pass, plus 20 megawatts was already got an allocation in the first pass, and we want to make sure that they're still eligible to get an allocation in the second pass. So for this resource, in the second pass, we will allow up to 70 megawatts greenhouse gas allocation. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Doug. Operator, if you could please open up the line for Peter Ashcroft.
Yeah, this is Peter Ashcroft, Utah Office of Energy Development. I just want to make sure I understand how this new design whether it achieves the same results as previously through a different method, or whether it's actually trying to achieve a different result. And I guess based on the first example, it seems like the result is the same. I'm wondering whether that's the general conclusion or just for that one example.
That's just for that one example. That's the, I think, as Mark Holman from PowerX highlighted, this looks like we still are addressing the bulk of the issue, but this is the whole purpose of putting out the report after we've implemented this approach to where we can, and I get hit on it in the next slide, where we can actually now calculate, are there any residual secondary dispatches that this approach did not account for, and we can actually quantify that to see if there are a needs for additional complexity to add to the optimization. The key is as you add more and more complexity to get more and more precise attribution, you start to sacrifice the other objectives and principles of that we've outlined before, where you could potentially now have pricing impacts inconsistent outside of the ISO, inconsistent with those principles.
I see. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Ellen Wolf, looks like you have a question.
Hi, yeah, thanks. It's Ellen Wolf for Rosero Consulting. I'm trying to follow a similar line of thinking as Peter was. Can you give us an example where it would produce a different result and or explain why the result can be different?
I think the key is how much you restrict the resources that can be attributed. I think under the incremental approach, we've probably restricted it. We've restricted it more in terms of what can actually be attributed. But in this example, we've loosened it up a little bit in terms of what can be attributed. But we're able to get, you know, a simpler implementation of that second pass and a more sort of streamlined solution. And so I think, you know, as we've said through this entire initiative, we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And we need to be balancing attribution accuracy with design complexity, given that, you know, the real-time dispatch is how we actually operate and run the grid. So I think we believe that this is a way to improve the performance of the second pass and still achieve a significant reduction in the secondary dispatch that is currently occurring. And we will then have the ability, as a result of when we put out the report, to evaluate if there is needed more complexity or whether we have sufficiently addressed the issue and could, you know, go forward with this current approach.
Okay, so thank you so much. I'm just trying to still understand the mathematics of why it is that this new approach can produce a different solution.
I'll try to explain how. The difference in the solution comes from the fact that we remove a constraint. We remove the constraint that forces, in the original proposal, the greenhouse gas allocation to be incremental to the greenhouse gas base. So with this revised proposal, we're removing that constraint. That constraint was problematic to start with, as we discussed in earlier calls, because it's a discontinuous constraint that requires binary variables, which, you know, causes performance issues and causes other pricing issues that we have to deal with. So for performance reasons mainly, but for other reasons as well, in this proposal we remove this constraint, so now we may have a different solution. And to see that with an example, I'll go back to the first example that we were discussing, and Mark Coleman was elaborating on it. Remember, that was a 100-megawatt resource that was scheduled 50 megawatts in the first pass, so it had a 50-megawatt greenhouse gas base, and it had a greenhouse gas bid for 30 megawatts. And this resource was dispatched optimally in the second pass to 70 megawatts, okay? So under the current, under the original proposal, we were going to limit the greenhouse gas allocation to the incremental amount of dispatch above the base. So 70 was the dispatch, 50 was the base. We would limit the greenhouse gas allocation to 20 megawatts out of the 30 possible, okay? In this proposal, we're not enforcing a constraint that would restrict the allocation to be only the incremental portion above the base. So you could potentially have an outcome with the 70 megawatt dispatch where the resource could receive up to 30 megawatts of greenhouse gas allocation, which means now out of the 50 megawatt of the base, 10 megawatt receive a greenhouse gas allocation. Now, you can argue that there may be some backfilling for that 10 megawatt, which could be causing some secondary dispatch issues, and this could be due to congestion management that happens in the external area. And you, as we mentioned, even with the original proposal, there is the potential of having offsetting dispatches because of congestion, that there is some potential of emission cost, net emission costs that are ignored in the in the proposal. The same can happen here. We are not losing that fact. It's still there. It's just that now that we remove the constraint, we have a different optimal solution. There might be other reasons why you may have that. Maybe there are economic trade-offs that can be realized now to allocate below the base. So there are explanations of why the solutions are different. So what are we trying to emphasize here is that we want to make sure that we have a reasonable proposal that will limit the secondary dispatch as much as possible. I don't think we're ever in a position to completely eliminate it, and I think we were very clear with the participants from the beginning of this initiative.
Thank you. Your example helped a lot. That's great.
All right. Looks like we have no more questions.
Okay. So we've already touched on this. You know, one of the benefits of having the Mike, did you look?
If we can go back to the previous slide.
Sure.
This is Mike Castellano from DMM. Ellen, I think if you want an example using Don's example of how this could happen, if you take G1 and say that $29 bid applies to the capacity from 0 to 100, and then from 100 to 200, the bid is say $40. Then I think the way it works out in the first pass, G1 and G3 are probably both dispatched to 100. And then in the second pass, you'll end up allocating 100 megawatts of transfers to California to G1, even though it may still just be dispatched at 100. And then Don's about to explain how we could potentially deal with that if it becomes common, I think.
Correct. Thanks. No, thanks. So one of the benefits of having the two-path solution is that we actually can now calculate what is the actual secondary dispatch occurring. Right now it's very difficult because, as we've shown through these examples, we don't have an appropriate reference point from which to determine whether or not the secondary dispatch has occurred. So as we've said before, no two-path solution is going to eliminate all of the secondary dispatch, and so this is really a balancing act. What is beneficial about this two-path solution is, one, we get the dispatch and the attribution as accurate as possible, minimizing the secondary dispatch. But we can also provide CARB with additional information on what the residual emissions are associated with any residual secondary dispatch. And CARB could use this quantity as their backstop amount or determine some other approach on how to deal with this. In addition, we are investigating if there are potential enhancements that may be needed if the demonstration that we're going to, and the reports we're going to put out in Q4 show that we are not being sufficiently accurate with the attribution. So we are continuing to see if there's other things, other more complex items we could include that may improve the attribution. But again, in doing that, we need to balance the competing objectives that we've discussed above. Any questions on that? So with regards to our current schedule and plan, we are basically maintaining what we had discussed with you all previously. So we are currently developing the software enhancements to perform a two-pass solution. We will brief the governing body and the ISO Board of Governors in July with regards to the current approach that we're designing. We will then prepare a report evaluating the accuracy of that two-path solution, and we will share that with stakeholders. Then, assuming that it works perfectly, we would then seek approval after reviewing that report with stakeholders at the governing body and the ISO Board of Governors, which then would allow us to implement this approach no later than January 1st, 2019. In the event that the report shows that we do need to do some of those more complex features, then we would, again, stakeholder that, and it may result in seeking approval later in 2018, but we would still be targeting a implementation date so that it could go live in 2019, for start of 2019.
So instead of works perfectly, I think you want to say works satisfactorily.
Very good, George. Exactly.
Okay, looks like we have a couple questions. Operator, if you wouldn't mind opening up the line for Lindsay, please.
Hi, Lindsay Fluckway from NV Energy. I was wondering if we would be allowed to provide comments after your report was published on the two-path solution.
Oh yeah, I mean we would stakeholder it just like anything else. So yeah, we would review the report and there could be comments submitted on that. So,
okay,
yeah.
Great. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Lindsay. Mark Holman, looks like you have a question.
I guess, Don, just in terms of timing, as I understand the solution, of course, you may need to go to FERC, but it doesn't seem like, at least from what I see on the surface, any required changes by CARB. Given your software releases, are, if I'm correct, are usually spring and fall, you said no later than January 1st, 2019. Are you thinking that if you're able to show the accuracy and that the two-path solution is working well, that you're going to go in the fall of 2018 in that software release? It doesn't seem like once you've got any approval by FERC for tariff changes, there's any reason to delay at that point. Do I have that correct?
So we're still finalizing the implementation dates on that, but I think we would concur with you that once we had FERC approval, we don't need CARB changes to implement this approach. And
okay,
given that it's not bid to bill, given that it's not bid to bill functionality, we don't have to slot it in the fall release.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate that.
Okay. So we have extended the comment deadline to July 6th. So we're looking forward to your comments. With regards to the write-up of the revised draft final proposal, we will post that no later than end of day tomorrow. We're a little slammed today on some other stuff, so we're working to get that out. But again, the presentation here really highlights the bulk of what the changes are. So with that, I'll open it up for any final questions or comments.
Please remember to hit #2 on your phone to ask a question. It looks like we have no more questions. All right. Thanks, everyone, for your time and for a very great and insightful discussion. Of course, thank you again to the presenters for your input. Please, everyone, remember to submit comments to initiativecomments@kiso.com by close of business on July 6th. Thank you again. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining today's conference. The session is now concluded, and you may disconnect.